a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
KSL's unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Carey on KSL News Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome on in. It's another edition of KSL's Unrivaled. Thanks for being with us this evening. Alex Carey, Scott Mitchell. Scott, you okay over there, buddy? Everything okay? We're starting the show up right now. Are you all right, buddy?
Yes.
Scott Mitchell, everybody, my co-host on KSL's Unrivaled. You know what we're going to do? We're going to start off the show
Tell
the
me.
Way we always do. With the 705 cut, so let's just get right to it.
The cut at 705. The unquestioned, undeniable, unbelievable. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
All right, so here we go. First of all, brought to you, as always, by Wasatch Medical Clinic. Struggling with ED, sick of pills? Visit wasatchmedicalclinic.com for a free offer. Joining us in just a moment here is going to be Ben Anderson of KSL sports fame, of course. He's our Jazz insider. And these Utah Jazz have been head-scratchingly good, Scott. That's the good kind of head-scratching that you always want with the Jazz. So that's the one where I'm always wondering if we feel good about this team. Are you concerned that you're going to get overhyped about this Jazz team right now?
I don't know if I'm concerned about getting overhyped about this team. I gotta say I'm pleased. And I think and I'm pleased really who I'm most pleased with is Mike Connolly.
I don't know
if it was a perception thing, but man, I really because everyone was like that the Jazz were so keen on getting him.
Yes.
And last year just fell kind of flat a little bit. And I know he played good in the bubble and all that stuff, but he just seems to be playing kind of at that all-star level, in the level that he's played at before. And I don't know if it's, you know, he's just a slow start or whatever it is, but you just get a sense that he's playing a lot better. I look at this Jazz team and I just sense that it's pretty, how do you say it, deep. But I think it's also a team that has good chemistry, and I think that was kind of lacking a little bit, maybe past number six on the team.
All right. Well, that's where we wanted to kind of start things here with our own Ben Anderson from PSLSports.com. He's our Jazz insider. Ben, what are we to think about this six-game win streak that the Jazz are now carrying going into another game with the Pelicans tomorrow night?
I think this is the expectation for how the team should have played, considering the amount of money and the assets they've invested into this team. They're over the luxury tax. They've traded a bunch of future first-round draft picks to get this type of talent on the roster. They should be able to go on streaks like this where they're just inarguably better than everyone else they face against, and it doesn't really matter what the opposing team does. It matters what the Jazz do, and as long as the Jazz do what they're built to do, they should win games relatively easily, and I think that's what they've been doing.
So you have a team that's, you know, over the luxury tax, spend all this, like you said. This is a team, I'm sure you'll agree with me, that's ready to win right now. So where do they fit in the West? Are they a team that can compete with the Lakers, or is there still pieces that could be added?
I don't think they're going to add any more pieces. I think this is the roster we're going to see. They could certainly use another big defender to go up against some of these guys like LeBron James or Anthony Davis that could kind of switch around. And they don't have that, so they're going to have to, you know, find ways around that. And the way you find ways around that is by making 23s in a game because you feel confident. If you can do that, you can win any game you're playing, regardless of who you're playing against. So I think that's the idea. I think the Jazz are trying to make sure that they've got that type of potent offense, and it looks like they do. And now the defense is kind of coming back to where it was 2 years ago and 3 years ago when they were a top two or three defense in the NBA. That disappeared last season, though they were a much better offensive team. Now the defense is back. The offense is better as a result, and they are a team that can compete probably with anybody on any given night. That might change in the playoffs.
I wonder if, you know, as we watch this thing go along here, and the Jazz last night were in, you know, control after about, you know, middle of the second quarter over the Pelicans. The Pelicans again tomorrow night. These little back-to-backs in 3 days that you're going to see with the Mavericks coming up later on in this series, and the Jazz are going to do the same thing against the Clippers. It's weird, but at the same time, it seems like it works out, you know, considering all the traveling that they're going to have to be doing and sneaking in games against people all year long. You might as well do that format, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's smart. I think it's a nice thing to do. And you know what? In the case of there being cancellations, which we've seen so many across the NBA now, it would be nice if a team has two games canceled against one team instead of saying, hey, you know, the Jazz had a random game canceled against Washington. Well, now they got to figure out a way to get to Washington to make that up, as opposed to, you know, and it might just be a one-off. You might play in Salt Lake, fly to Washington the next night, and then have to come back and play, you know, 2 days later in Utah. And that's just crazy travel. If you're playing two games against the same team, yeah, and you have to make them up. Okay, so the second half of the season, you go and you stay in New Orleans, or Dallas comes and stays in Utah in these situations. So, no, I think it's smart. I think it's a good way to get guys to stick around and not feel like they're being pushed all around and potentially being exposed to the coronavirus, and that's a positive. I think that was smart scheduling.
Who has surprised you this season, both playing well, and who surprised you who's not playing very well?
For the Jazz, I would say I think Joe Ingles has surprised me with how well he's played, and I know he's missed some games. And maybe that was a good thing. I mean, he looked great last night, but I was worried that he and Mike Conley had never really played all that well together when they've been healthy. They just couldn't figure out who was the point guard and what role and who was supposed to be bringing the ball up. It was always clunky, and it's not anymore. They really seem to have figured that out. So that might be my biggest surprise. Maybe Derek Favors, who hasn't been bad. He's a big reason why the Jazz are a top 10 defense right now, but he doesn't look like the same guy I think the Jazz had 2 years ago and 3 years ago when he was such a key part of the team. But, you know, he's aging. He's still trying to adjust to his teammates. Derek Favors might be the guy who I'm thinking, you know, he's owed kind of a lot of money for the type of production he's giving you right now.
Ben Anderson joining us from KSLSports.com. His article right now you can read at KSLSports.com. It's about looking for those that two-game sweep, these little mini-series they're doing, and being able to sneak those games in. They were not unpredictably very successful from behind the three-point arch, considering the three-point defense that New Orleans does not have. What kind of adjustments can happen? Since you're playing the same team one game to the next, that's a unique way to go, okay, here's what we have to adjust on. We got a day to figure it out. And so what happens with this team tomorrow when they face off against the Jazz?
They might prefer to go a little bit smaller. You know, they're one of the truly big teams in the NBA because they'll play Steven Adams and then they will play Brandon Ingram and they'll play Zion Williamson. And all those guys are 6'8 or bigger. And Zion, he's not shooting threes this year like he did last season. So he's basically a center the way we think of modern centers. So they could go a little bit smaller. Now they're not going to take Zion out of the game, but maybe they pull Steven Adams out earlier, make Rudy defend Zion, Brandon Ingram moves to the four, and then they try and go with some of their guards because they've got, you know, Lonzo Ball and Nikhil Alexander-Walker or Kyra Lewis if they want to play him off the bench, or Josh Hart. You know, they've just got all these guards that they can play. They could do that, and they actually had success early in the fourth quarter blitzing Donovan Mitchell as soon as he got past half court, and it led to a bunch of turnovers. They could try and do something like that, which is kind of fun. You get to see playoff adjustments, and that's what makes playoff basketball so good, is they know how to take away your three or four best options, ideally, and make one thing try and beat you, and that leads to Donovan Mitchell 50-point games or Jamal Murray 50-point games. So we'll see some fun adjustments, and it's going to be harder for the Jazz to adjust because they played so well.
Have you seen a better sense of urgency? I mean, is that part of why this team has started off as well this year, considering that the season's shortened and could even be shortened more with, you know, maybe the cancellation of certain games. Is it a sense of urgency from the team, or is this team just more gelled than maybe it has in the past because there's not so many new faces?
I think a sense of urgency is a good word for it, but maybe not in the sense that, oh, they're playing harder or they're valuing these games more than they did last year. It's urgency on the defensive end. It's where they're picking up guys, and Quinn Snyder has talked about that a lot, where as soon as guards are getting across half court, the Jazz are just more locked in, where it felt like a lot of time last year they would just say, well, if I get beat off the dribble, Rudy Gobert's back there, and he's the two-time defensive player of the year, so he'll clean it up. And he ended up not doing it as well last season, and they were the 15th or 16th best defense. So now you're seeing better engagement from Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell and Jordan Clarkson, and as a reflection, you're getting steals, you're getting deflections, you're getting fast break points lead to threes, and they're just backbreakers for opposing teams. So I think it is urgency. I think it's a kind of an attention to detail that they haven't had in the years past, but that might be to the point where they're just so comfortable with each other, then you can start getting better at some of those little things that will take that team to the next level.
Ben, final question here as we get you out. The Jazz are right now tied for second in the West with the Clippers very early, obviously, in the season. But, you know, 14 games in, that's a good chunk after, you know, they're going to be playing 70 games this season, 72 games. So can they end up in that number two spot by the end of the year? Is that just kind of is that high hopes and they're overachieving right now?
No, I think it'll be really disappointing if they end up below four. And if you're in this type of season with shortened seasons like you're talking about, fewer games, you should, if you're at four, you should be in competition for two.
All right, there he is, Ben Anderson, giving Jazz fans hope across the country and right here on KSL News Radio. You just go to KSLSports.com. You can find his byline. Ben, thanks for hanging out, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks, dudes.
You hear that? You're a dude. You're a dude, Scott.
Yeah.
Dude, bro.
I like the word dude.
I like it,
dude.
Too. Hey, we're taking the break here. We'll come back. We've got so much more to talk about tonight. When we return, Zach Wilson getting a lot of comparisons to quarterbacks that are in the NFL currently. I'm not sure if there is a comparison, but we've got a troll poll out that we'll ask out there and see another person comparing Patrick Mahomes and Zach Wilson in the same sentence. Stay right here with us. More to go on KSL's Unrivaled KSL News Radio.
Hey, welcome back to KSL's Unrivaled. I'm Scott Mitchell, and he's Alex Keery. And it's, I don't know, it's relatively early in the show, but I love when we talk about the Jazz. And I love this time of year. I've been a huge Jazz fan my entire life. And the one thing I wanted to ask Ben that I didn't, Alex, is about Rudy Gobert. Because I'm just not hearing a lot about Rudy Gobert.
Mm.
Is that your question?
No, I'm
yeah,
just...
Yeah, how's Rudy Gobert doing?
The thing is that Rudy is...
Is he just average? Is he just... Because he's always crying. He's always complaining because
He's gotten so much better at the... Well, no, but the thing is he's got a very, very, very specific role that he plays. And I think
he's nervous without a chip on his shoulder. I guess that's what I'm saying, Alex.
Well, get ready for one. You know why? Because I think that he's not going to be an all-star this year. And it's not because he's not as good as he has been. I think he's exactly where he has been. He's still the defensive elite when it comes to big men in the league. I think he's still right there, top two or three, and you know, a two-time defensive player of the year, et cetera, et cetera. I think he's still that. He hasn't lost a step on any of that stuff. And if you thought you were going to see a Rudy who was going to turn into a 22 points a game Rudy Gobert, I think that. You don't need that, one, and two.
So my expectation maybe has changed because he's been paid more money.
Maybe that's it.
But he's just going to be Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, I mean, look, are you okay with 13 points and 15 rebounds a game?
I'm okay
12
if the
and
Jazz
14?
Win.
You know, that's exactly right. And yeah. So if people start to freak out and wonder if Rudy's going to be an all-star or not, Rudy might not be an all-star this year. Well, one, I don't know what that looks like. But he might not be an all-star this year. And on top of it, I don't think that it matters. Because for him, I think it matters a lot less. I'm telling you, the whole COVID thing in March of last year, when he was, you know, patient zero in the NBA, and he was, we forget, Rudy Gobert was the third confirmed case in the state of Utah. He was the third person to get COVID-19 in our state. That's how early on that he got it. And boy, we criticized the heck out of him. Now, NBA players go out and they're at the strip club and they're hanging out with their families and they'll get fined and they just kind of shrug their shoulders. Rudy was getting death threats, man. I'll tell you, I think Rudy changed a lot. I think he got more humble in the areas he needs to be more humble. On the basketball court, that's not the place that he's ever been, a guy who thinks that other people are way better than he is. And he's proven it.
Hang on. You just said something. You said NBA players are hanging out at strip clubs with their families? Is that what you said? Or are they hanging out with
depraved instances, I'm sure that's okay. True. But other guys
are hanging out with their families.
Okay. So Kyrie Irving, when he was out and he got fined $900,000 last week, everyone's like, where were you? He's like, I had some personal and some family things going on, and so we'll leave it at that.
Gotcha.
So there you go. Personal/family things. Those are in different areas.
Okay. I just want to clarify.
I do think that Rudy has grown up a ton. Look how much bigger his arms and shoulders have gotten. I'm proud of the workout he's done, right? I think he's okay with the fact that he can be that 15-15 guy, and that's an amazing night for him. I think that we, and maybe he even expected himself to be a 24-point-night a guy, a 24-points-a-night type of person. He's not. He's not. And guess what? You've got a superstar scorer on your lineup. That's the end of it. And then you've got, like, lights-out three-point shooters. That's it. And you know what? When they're not open, you're option number one. So be happy with that. So I think that he, you know, if you're expecting Rudy Gobert to be an all-star this year, it might not happen. And it might be okay because it might be the chip on the shoulder you're looking for, Scott, but it also doesn't matter because I think people are going to kind of get over the whole he's the best defender in the league thing. That gets old for people quick. I'm just telling you. So, all right.
Okay.
Moving on here. Scott, speaking of guys who may or may not be as good as advertised, we know how good Rudy is. We know how good he can be. We have no idea how good Zach Wilson's going to be in the NBA. This is a guy who This is a guy who is getting all the publicity, and he is going to benefit from the fact that there is not a senior game, there's going to be a virtual combine. He can sit out all that stuff because his stock is not going to improve any more than where it is right now. Am I wrong? I think his stock is. This is the best he can do right now.
Actually, teams like Justin Herbert a year ago played in the Senior Bowl. It really helped him. And I think it can really help Zach Wilson from the sense of people, like, you watch him on film and he looks small on film. So when they see him in real life and realize that he's bigger, it just to stand next to a guy, you just get a sense. And that's something I think people could garner from him, right? And also, it's an opportunity for him to kind of, because I think there's one stigmatism. Zach Wilson had a really good year against average competition. All right, BYU did not play a significant, you know, a team with a lot of talent on it for the most part. Even in the Coastal Carolina game, that's not a Power Five team. And so, and I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that if there is a question mark about him, what's he going to do when he gets up against really good competition? How's he going to handle that? Is he going to be able to, you know, throw the ball accurately? Is he going to be able to, you know, does he panic and does he revert to certain things? And if they had a chance to kind of watch him play in a game against fairly good competition, the Senior Bowl, I think the Senior Bowl does more to improve someone's stock than the Combine ever does. The Combine is more of like it's a further validation.
But he's gotten so much pub though that I'm like, he's on the charts high enough. Like he's kind of in most people's case in most of the highest, you know, in most of these pre-draft, like, you know, mock drafts, he's the second to fourth quarterback taken, and he's fine right in there. Like
second to fourth, and could be, you know. The draft is funny, Alex. I'm just telling you, it is. It's a weird thing, and you really.
So you're saying he might be hanging out in the green room. He might be hanging out in the green room.
What's Zach Wilson's weakness? I mean, he had a really good year. His weakness is he didn't play great competition. That they're going to look at that. And if he had a chance to kind of erase that, you know, the Senior Bowl is one of those that he could. I don't even know if he could be eligible for Senior Bowl.
Let's take the break here. When we come back, we've got more to go. I still want to play for you that Brady Popinga quote when he talked about comparing him to Patrick Mahomes. We'll get into that. We've got much more to go on the program, so stick around. Much more to go right here. We'll talk about the Pac-12, how it compares talent-wise to the other conferences. Is it falling even further behind, or did this year allow them to kind of catch up a little bit? Stay right here with us. More to go on KSL's Unrivaled on KSL News Radio.
This is Derek Miller of the Salt Lake.
KSL's Unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled, Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Thanks for being with us this evening. And, yes, got a lot going on in the show this
Can I give you evening. A shout-out, Alex?
You want to give me a shout-out?
I
want to
give you a shout-out.
You have a shout-out
yes,
to
I do.
For,
I want to shout out to everyone in the world who listens to our show,
yeah.
The millions of people all over mm-hmm. the world. Yes. The teams you love, what is it? The teams you watch, the sports you love? I don't know what it is. I totally forgot it.
No, it's all right. I got you.
The sports
the teams you,
you
live
love,
for, the sports you love. Yeah, the teams you live yes. for, the sports you love.
Yeah, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Yeah. I've only heard it for like 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Alex, everyone, came up with that phrase.
Yeah, that's
he
right.
He coined that phrase for
it's
us.
So, it, and it's so good that my co-host of 3 years.
It's so memorable.
Can't remember it. It's fine. Way to roll that out, dog.
Oh, well. Let's
oh,
move on.
Oh, my heavens. You done now? I don't know where to go with that. Is that a compliment?
Well, no, I just.
No, I got you.
It was right there. It was right there on the tip of my tongue. And so it's the teeth.
Oh, my God. The teeth.
Teams you
the
live
teeth
for,
you
the
brush for.
You
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or multiple endo-
there you go.
Type 2, or if allergic to it.
Anyway, stop I think it's
hello? You guys are turning on something on the TV here. I don't know what's up. I don't know either.
It's not me.
It is not you. I agree. Scott, here's what yes. we've got going on here. We've got Zach Wilson being compared to Patrick Mahomes again. And we have a troll poll up on Twitter.
Again?
Yes. We have a troll poll up. We have a troll poll up right now. You can start your votes right here. It says, what current NFL quarterback do you think Zach Wilson is comparable to? So the Twitter poll that we have up says Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, Jared Goff, or Ryan Tannehill. Now, the thing was, a lot of comments have said, where's Russell Wilson on this list? Or another one that's there was another one that says, where's Aaron Donald on this? Or where's Sam Darnold on this list? Which is an insult, of course. A lot of Ute fans say that kind of stuff. There's some people of saying course, he hasn't yeah. played anybody even on the college level, why are we even talking about this? Well, it's about styles. It's about where he's at. And I think that people see that he's not a runner first. That certainly is not his thing. But if he gets loose, you feel okay with him running because he's kind of quick and he's kind of elusive there. And I think that he could learn a thing or two from Russell Wilson, his older brother, Zach Wilson, Russell Wilson. But Patrick Mahomes, that comparison comes up, and Brady Popinga, former BYU linebacker and former Packer linebacker, gave that same comparison when he was on the Straight Fire podcast on the Fox network of podcasters. What he had to say about the whole thing.
NFL throws last year, but this year, I mean, I'm watching him, and I'm like, it's not a far-fetched comparison to compare him to Aaron Rodgers and I'm not saying that he's at that level, but at least somebody has flashes that look like Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes. He has those and the ability to move and throw off of different planes, be off balance, throw sidearm, three quarters, over the top. He has that whole package. And so when you're in a league to where moving and elongating plays as a quarterback is probably the number one trait, and just having baseline throwing skills. I mean, we see that with a number of quarterbacks. He's one of the best at doing that. Trevor Lawrence is the best in this draft. But by far, Zach Wilson's the second best.
Well, I thought it was nice to say by
I don't
far.
Agree,
he's
I don't agree.
Best.
I don't agree with a whole lot of what he just said.
Okay,
to start off with, if you look at a guy like Patrick Mahomes, and you brought up Russell Wilson, and I'm glad you did, because these guys grow up throwing a baseball. They're really good baseball players, and I really believe that translates into your throwing motion as a quarterback. And you're seeing a lot of this, and even more so with Patrick Mahomes, but a lot of Russell Wilson is there's a baseball foundation, there's a baseball background. And I know Zach Wilson played baseball in high school, I believe. Maybe not at, on the level or, you know, with the kind of competition that some of these other guys did. But and so you see some of that. But this whole thing about all these different planes and all this different, you know, that is so overhyped. It's a lot of garbage. A lot of people, a lot of really successful quarterbacks in the NFL for years, for eons of years, have had to make throws, different angles, different planes, whatever you want to call it. and that's not something that's new, right? It's really not new. Something, and I'll tell you, nobody does this but Patrick Mahomes. And that he has the ability on the run to throw the ball very far down the field with a lot of velocity. And he's able to throw, which everyone has said, you do not throw late down the middle or you don't throw to your backside. Patrick Mahomes is the only guy I've ever seen do it. And so it's not – and Zach Wilson doesn't do that. Okay, so
let me –
So you want to stop there. Trevor Lawrence – doesn't do any of it. Trevor Lawrence does not look like Patrick Mahomes. He does not look like Zach Wilson. He does not look like Aaron Rodgers.
So why is he by far the best in the draft then?
Because Trevor Lawrence is a traditional guy like a Peyton Manning. He's a traditional guy like a Tom Brady. None of those guys. And so what it is, he's more like Justin Herbert, where he's the traditional, prototypical NFL quarterback, and that still works in the NFL today. I know everyone's caught up and in love with all of this, you know, this spread offense and all that stuff, but the traditional way of throwing in the football, because you still have people out there that do it and do it well, and Trevor Lawrence is one of those guys.
When you see, like, you know, which one is the more important trait to have? Is it to be that Russell Wilson type guy? Is that the direction, or the Patrick Mahomes guy? Is that the direction of where the NFL is, or is that just the funnest one to watch? Because the reality is, if I have, Patrick Mahomes is selling all the jerseys that he is because he's so much more fun to watch than the in the pocket passer. I mean, even Aaron Rodgers runs a little bit more than the traditional, quote unquote, traditional quarterback does.
But Aaron Rodgers does not want to run.
No.
Because Aaron Rodgers has ended up really, like, injured every time he runs a lot. He's not a running quarterback. Aaron Rodgers is really good at understanding where all of his people are. He's great. And extending plays is a very true thing. It's a real thing, like Papingas mentioned. But it just puts so much pressure on a defense when you have to defend for over 3-4 seconds. And that's what happens when you extend a play. Aaron Rodgers is really good at that kind of thing. But it's the thing with Patrick Mahomes, where Patrick Mahomes, what he can do to a defense with his ability, Alex, is when you have a guy that rolls out to his offside, because a lot of teams will not even roll a guy out to his left side if he's right-handed. But with a guy like Patrick Mahomes, he can roll out to his left side, throw all the way back to his right side with velocity. Then when you move, you still have all of the field, because a lot of times when you move to one side of the field, you essentially are stuck on that side of the field. And most
it's like
defenders
it's a quarterback's it's a quarterback's coach nightmare. It's a quarterback coach's nightmare when you're throwing across your body back into the field of play. But Patrick Mahomes is able to still be able to do it
unbelievably well. I mean, he's so good. But he does it well when he's healthy. And I'm not convinced, you know, I know this is a discussion about Zach Wilson. I'm a little concerned about a lot of these comparisons right now. Because that could put a lot of pressure on Zach Wilson to maybe try to be more than he really is. Because he's not Patrick Mahomes and he's not Aaron Rodgers. He needs to be Zach Wilson.
Well, it's the other thing about, like, actually recognizing coverages, getting to know, can you, like, multitask enough to be able to recognize pressures, things like that, that once you get in the
Sam
NFL.
Darnold, Alex.
Yes.
Right.
And once
Sam
you get in the
Darnold
NFL, that
awesome.
Speed is crazy. It's insane.
Right. Sam Darnold was awesome at USC. He was a very impressive college quarterback. And all of a sudden he goes, I'm seeing ghosts out there. Yeah. I don't know what I'm seeing out there. And it's a different ball game. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Let's take the break here. We'll come back. We've got more to go right here in KSL's Unrivaled. MVPs are next. Stay with us on an Inauguration Day edition of KSL's Unrivaled. That's not really a thing on a sports show, but anyway, you get it.
KSL's Unrivaled.
The unrivaled MVP. Scott and Alex crowned tonight's most valuable player, according to Scott. According to Alex. Most valuable player.
All right, welcome back to KSL's Unrivaled. I'm Scott Mitchell. He's Alex Carey. And that's what the music coming back on the program said. It is our MVPs for the night. This is certainly, Alex, one of the segments that I always enjoy. And I like it because I like to look at the positive side of things. And sometimes we look at the negative side, and that's fun, too. I like that.
But you love to look on the negative
part,
side of things.
I like that.
No, I get it. I get what you're saying. No, that's the they so poo-poo.
Like
that's
the bright so side of life.
I know.
Yeah,
I know.
Right. That's right. We do that every once in a while because we need to call people out when they're, you know, out and they're not doing things in a manner that, you know, is acceptable.
Yeah, Scott will get you. Scott will get you if you're not doing the right things on and off the field there. All right? So he'll get you. So, but tonight is MVPs, yes? Yeah. And that's why we do it. The MVPs are –
yes.
Fake awards.
Yes, it is the MVPs
people.
Tonight.
Yeah, so fake awards for real people. So if you want to start us off here, Scott, give us an MVP of the evening here for you.
Yeah, you know how I think it was like everyone, right? I gave everyone the MVP.
What does
that
mean?
It was all of the bass fishing people.
Oh, that's right.
Well, you just made fun of me when I did it. And so I thought you would remember a time when you made fun of me. Here's what I'm going to do. Okay, and I've been, you know, I'm not getting political here, okay, but I am gonna bring up our system.
But here goes.
Because that, as soon as I give a disclaimer, my MVP tonight is our system of government. And the reason it's the MVP is for the last 244 years. Every 4 years, we elect a new president. And this year has been, it's been awful. I mean, there have been some ugly, ugly things that have happened.
What?
It's been very contentious. I know. Yeah. It's been contentious in so many ways. And quite frankly, the last 4 years from both sides of the aisle have been really, really contentious. It's not one person. It's not one side. It's everyone. Everyone's at fault here. And as contentious and I think it's probably as heated as maybe it's ever been in our country or, you know, I know there are times that I didn't exist during the Civil War. I can only imagine, but today, and I have to say, I didn't want to watch it. Didn't want to watch the inauguration. I didn't vote for the person who won the election. It's a lot of my views are different, but I have to say that I was touched by the fact that we can really battle one another in our political arena, but every 4 years we continue to have a government that transfers that power in the office of our main representative, our president, that happens peacefully. And I know leading up to it, it was ugly, it was contentious, but today it wasn't. And hopefully, as a country, we can look at this because sports is kind of like this, Alex. You get in heated battles with your opponent and people you don't agree with, right? And at the end of the game, when it's all over, you can say, well done, and you respect your opponent. And sometimes you have to bow out gracefully when you lose and learning how to do that. And other times it's awesome when you have that victory. And so today was just a stark reminder to me that, I live in a country where we have this behind us. So there you go. There's my MVP.
That's
our system of government.
I like that.
My MVP.
I like the sentiment there. There was also, you know, we were talking about this earlier during show prep, and I'll bring it up right now. This is one of those moments where, you know what, you don't have to go across the field and offer a massive hug to the guy who just beat you or whatever, you know, like because I was always wondering because guys do that now so much more. They basically have a party. They're like laughing together and all that. And I get some of these guys play together. They're friends and things like that. But sometimes after these games, these players, we saw adopted this year in the Pee Wee level of football because of COVID. When the game was over, you would just say, go other team. And then you'd wave from across the field. That's the way I think a lot of people should. It was respectful, and that's what a lot of people are doing today during the inauguration. They go, hey, I'm just going to wave from over here and go, good job, good luck, and move on. And if that's the way that makes you and you can support it, then there you go. And you know, the part where you go to the midfield and pull a Jim Harbaugh and give a little bit too rough of a handshake as you push past him or something like that. That's if we're going to keep this metaphor going, that's not the way to do it. So I agree with you, Scott. And you know what? Kudos to you, because that was probably not an easy one to say for you. But I will say that that's a really, really good one. We probably should have done yours last, because mine's just a regular old football player.
Okay. We can get back to sports here. But I think there's a comparison, like, you know, like you said, and I really do in sports. And it's learning how to, you know, I think have a – when it's all done, when the battle's all over, you can end it gracefully, and that's what happens in our country every 4 years.
So here's the deal with my MVP. It's Philip Rivers. We're going to talk about Philip Rivers a little bit next hour during the NFL roundup. But I think Philip Rivers is just not going to get. I mean, he doesn't get a lot of the attention or any of the attention. I mean, he's just going to be like the most underappreciated 68,000 yard passing quarterback in the history of the league. You know, a guy who is top five in all major categories, but never even. I mean, he got to the AFC Championship game a while back. He went to the playoffs this year with the Colts. I thought that was kind of fun. 17th year, he wore the number 17 his whole career. Dude's got 9 kids, and he's just is, and he retired today, and he did it gracefully, and just said, "Hey, fun career, awesome. I've been blessed." And I'm just going to kind of ride off into the sunset here with you can't ride off into the sunset. You've got to, like, have a whole stagecoach full of your 9 kids to ride off into the sunset with. So,
well, you just have a very large van, or, you know, maybe one of those, you know. I mean, I like the RVs.
Yeah, you can do
just
that.
Put them all in an RV.
Do one of those Sprinter vans with, like, all the windows on it, seats 13.
Right. Yeah,
yeah, no problem. Imagine that. Look, I have 6 kids, so I can't say much in terms of the, you know, not having big families, but like, we're at the suburban level, and that was kind of a deal breaker for me. I said, "Honey, we fit everybody in the suburban. Guess what? If it does not, if it's way more than that, if it's any more than that, and we can't own a suburban anymore to get everybody around, we're not doing it. We're not going to be going on to a 7th child just so we can have one of those massive square vans with all the windows on it." So that's where I draw the line. I can still drive a suburban and look semi-normal. And that's kind of so my wife is also the MVP tonight for putting up with my antics. That's how we decide,
you know,
how many kids we can
Philip
have.
Rivers.
If I can't keep driving the Suburban, then we're not having that many kids. I'm sorry.
What's hard about Philip Rivers, aside from all his kids and riding off in the sunset, is his legacy. It's like, if you don't win a Super Bowl, it's so hard to have like a lasting legacy in the NFL. It just is. And even some guys who win them don't have that legacy. I mean, you look at a guy like Brad Johnson, or you look at, you know, Trent Dilfer, or some of these guys who have won a single Super Bowl, or Mark Rippon, and they just don't—they still don't have a legacy. And so there's just that asterisk, even with a guy with as many yards as Philip Rivers, where he's just, you know, he's been amazing, but there's no Super Bowl, and that just always is there. Even Dan Marino, and I can tell you, it absolutely eats Dan Marino alive. That he has to listen to that silly question and he has to be asked it, you know, because, and he was an amazing player, but it's, you know, unless you win those Super Bowls, it just puts it, there's that black dot on your resume.
All right, we're gonna take the break here. When we come back, we got our second hour of the program. Sam Farnsworth from KSL 5 Television is gonna join us next hour. We also have a couple things to talk about here as well, because it is a day of the transition of power. We are going to look over some of the sports history best and worst transitions of power from one regime to the next in the sports world. So we'll have that when we come back. Plus, like I said, Sam's going to break some things down for us. We've got the NFL Roundup coming up, all those things, and much, much more right here on KSL's Unrivaled Series.
KSL's Unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled, Alex Keery and Scott Mitchell. Thanks for being with us this evening. As We watched some of the fireworks going off in Washington, D.C. on Inauguration Day, and we see some other fireworks going on in the form of breaking news across the Pac-12 world. As this is happening, as you're hearing it right now, as of 8:01 when I received this email from the Pac-12 conference, they have announced that Commissioner Larry Scott will conclude his term as commissioner. That is the news right now going on with the Pac-12, and that's going to be where we start things. Right,
yay!
Here with our
yay!
I want you
Wait, am I supposed to be? Am I supposed to be grateful? Am I supposed to be grateful?
Not until after the sounder.
The cut at 8:05. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
All right, so Larry Scott officially going to. Well, they've both parties, Scott, this is my favorite, both parties have agreed to part ways. Now, his contract extension is through June of 2022. It's agreed that he'll remain in a role of some sort until June 30th of this year to assist in the transition. Using all sorts of transition terminologies today. The transition of power.
Yeah, there's a transition team, a transition of
yes.
power. Yeah.
So the Pac-12, this is a massive deal. We've been wondering how long it was going to take the Pac-12 to figure this out, that Larry Scott was not a great ambassador for their conference and did not move them in the right direction.
Well, and I think you have to hand it to the Pac-12 to recognize that it wasn't right, and they made a decision. It's the right decision. The Pac-12 is lagging in its athletics. The Pac-12 is lagging, and it really needs, and it needs someone with a different kind of vision. Be interesting to see how they go about finding that person and who it is, because it will really benefit them. You scratched your head at a lot of things that happened, including this last season. And COVID, and it could have been handled so differently by the conference. But I'm elated. I'm really glad, you know, for the opportunity, because you always get nervous.
Wait,
you know,
did you get the job offer?
It could be worse. No, I
didn't.
Like. I'd love to be the commissioner of the Pac-12. Are you kidding? Ooh, that would be fun.
Well, listen, Oof. They're going to have to dial
as
back.
As long as I could still do our radio show.
Yeah,
and I'd put that in the stipulations, by the way.
Of one of the two Rolexes that they give you, what I assume is they just give you when you're the Pac-12 commissioner, will you give me one of those? Also,
what about the
term? Look, I don't want to get too far into the weeds here, but he did get a loan from the conference for a personal home. Is that still going to be honored, or how's that going to work?
Yeah, see, I don't really know. You know, all the details, because it's kind of a developing, breaking thing.
It's a weird thing, and it's an interesting time to do it too, because you're kind of in no man's land when it comes to the time of year that people are talking about commissioners. I mean, we're talking. I guess it's better that it's happening now and not right before football season. But what does the next Pac-12 commissioner? What's an ideal picture of a Pac-12 commissioner mean for you? Like, what is the thing that they have to do if they're going to earn the trust of people who, frankly, have wondered if the Pac-12 has just been sitting out there floundering and definitely underperforming for being, you know, one of the great conferences in the country, and they've turned into below the Power Five group of conferences, and they've kind of been in that mid-tier. They've barely been a Power Five conference. They certainly haven't performed like one.
Well, they're like a Power Four and a Half conference. There's no question about that. What I think needs to happen, you need someone, a voice that, one, you need someone who has a clear vision of, like, their leadership and where they want to go with things, but you need that voice that's going to protect you. It's going to protect your interests. It's going to make sure that you're heard, that your voice is heard, because the Pac-12 has a seat at the table with all of these big conferences. And the challenge is that right now, I don't know that people know the voice of the Pac-12. I don't know that they know where this conference is or what it wants to become. And I know when Mark Harlan was hired as the athletic director at the University of Utah, he says, look, it's nice that we're in the Pac-12. I want to win championships. And I really think that the new commissioner says, how can we make our highest profile sports? Because the other sports are fine. They take care of themselves. And the Pac-12 is good in those other sports. But how do we, our high profile sports, how do we become relevant and competitive on a national stage? And that may be looking into ways of changing recruiting. How can these schools? It may be ways of looking at, look, we've got some marquee programs in our conference, and we've got to figure out ways to help us get on that national stage, whether it's a USC, because people go, if USC is relevant, the Pac-12 is relevant and above any other program. And there has to be that consideration. And look, I'm a Utah fan, and I like that about Utah, but it's also about how can we bring some of these other teams in the conference and raise their level of play. And I don't know how much they can get it, you know, the Pac-12 and the conference and the commissioner can get involved in recruiting. But I seriously would look at how whatever ways the commissioner of the Pac-12 can really get involved and change the image and perception of the conference. It's priority one.
I wonder too, I mean, this is what he was the butt of so many jokes, right? About, can you believe what the Pac-12 is doing now? Not the least of which were, the lack of any movement when it came to what are you going to do with a season start, and to be like the last one to start up, like beyond the last one to start things up. When it came to the major conferences and not really having a plan in place and seeming like it was going to be late to, expenditures that you were like, if you're trying to save money, you're not doing it by having such lavish offices in the middle of San Francisco, or, you know, just a lot of things where you went, is what this guy is doing for the conference going to be? I mean, he wasn't a recognizable person either. I mean, this was the guy who had a mediocre, tennis pro career as a professional athlete, and then came over to the side of athletics and administration there, and there was nothing really that moved the needle. I mean, there were times where everything – it was a tough thing for me because they would say, look how much I built the revenue at X, Y, and Z before I came to, when he worked for the ATP Tour for tennis, and it's like, great, you built some revenue there. In the Pac-12, it's not just about building revenue, and you don't build revenue by spending so much money. So in my mind, the Pac-12 needs to be a Hollywood type hire. The Pac-12 commissioner needs to be whatever the Urban Meyer equivalent is of a commissioner, so that you turn heads and you make changes that are sweeping and immediate, and everybody sees it and goes, ooh, I want what they've got going on in California, Washington, Oregon, Utah, Colorado, Arizona, because that's what you have to do. You've got to turn heads for this conference again for the Pac-12, because so right now it's a little bit of a laughing stock amongst the P5 conferences.
Yeah, when I was on the Crimson Club board of directors many, many years ago, and it was when Utah was moving into the Pac-12, and everyone was so excited about the Pac-12 network. And this was really kind of Larry Scott's baby, right? And in theory, it was a good idea. Like, have your own network and be able to promote your product. And they really thought that they would get the viewership. And they ran into DirecTV that said, we're not going to air. They got into this huge negotiation, which wouldn't allow people to have access to the Pac-12 network. And it was a battle they were going to lose. And so they had this long-term agreement with the Pac-12 network. And no one was watching the Pac-12 network. And so football's popular because it's on television, right? And so the SEC and the Big Ten are on television, and really the Pac-12 needs to get a presence on television, a much better TV deal. They've got to figure out how to maybe scrap the Pac-12 network, incorporate it into some other network service, look at streaming option, whatever there is. But it's got to be more relevant in the big TV deals. And I know those are coming up in recent years, but in future years. But that was, I mean, they were talking about this massive amount of revenue that all these schools were going to get from the Pac-12 network. And it never happened. It never materialized.
Right.
But you want relevance in the Pac-12, you get a much better TV deal than you have right now.
Let's take the break here. We'll come back. Sam Farnsworth from KSL5 Television is going to join us. And we're going to chat about this developing story right now with Larry Scott leaving the Pac-12, the Pac-12 leaving Larry Scott in a mutual breakup. Those are my favorites, Scott. So we'll take a break here. We'll come back. We've got more to go here on the program. Sam's going to join us next right here on KSL's Unrivaled on KSL News Radio.
All right, welcome back to KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell, Alex Carey, and I believe Sam Farnsworth is joining us in this part of the program.
Yes, he's just I stole him for a minute here. We chatted just in the studio here for a second. Then he goes into his hermetically sealed situation. So that
I see.
Sam, so, you don't have to wear the mask in the $64,000 question booth. There's nobody else in there. So he can't hear himself now. All right. So okay. What about now? Oh, I can almost hear him. I can almost hear him. Just run into the. Just I don't know what's going on. Either way, Scott. We were just talking about, and Sam and I were just talking about the Pac-12, of course, the big news of 21 minutes ago now, Larry Scott leaving the Pac-12, and he is no longer there. Sam.
Hey.
There you go, buddy.
Hey, bada bing, bada boom.
Hey. So with the exit of Larry Scott, Sam walked in and said, yes, long overdue. And I think that's the
That's the consensus of everyone.
Yeah, I hope I didn't sound too harsh and mean. I mean, this is a guy who was getting paid, in the millions and millions of dollar range, and while taking a loan from
the press conference to announce his own pay raise a couple years ago.
Yes,
right?
There were some hilarious moments where I don't even think the most ardent of like Utah Pac-12 defenders. Can't look at. I hope I'm not coming across as some like BYU like smile on my face grumpy guy. Mm-hmm. We were absolutely wondering why on earth this guy kept the job that he did for as long as he did.
I think a lot of people wondered that. Clearly, with some of the decision making that was happening, within the Pac-12 corporate offices, whatever you want to say, within the hierarchy of the Pac-12, but also it wasn't. Paying dividends. Whatever they were doing wasn't paying dividends on the field, on the court. Their teams just weren't succeeding at the level. And you look at football. That's the sport you're going to look at first. And it just wasn't paying off in the Pac-12, especially in recent years. And so, the product wasn't winning. And the TV deal, I know the Pac-12 is trying to paint it that they had this lucrative deal, but the Pac-12 network itself hasn't worked out so great. I mean, it's decent, but it hasn't worked out as great as I think they thought it would. The fact that they continue to base themselves in an office complex that costs millions of dollars a year in San Francisco, one of the most expensive cities in the world. I mean, there's a lot of business decisions that are just kind of baffling as well. But, I will put a little silver lining on it, a silver bow on it, a little bit.
That's kind of Scott's job. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, exactly.
He's
right?
The silver lining guy.
I'm sure he'll take it from here, but... But if you want to say, okay, what did Larry Scott do that was good for the Pac-12? And maybe the conference was already headed that direction without his leadership anyway. But obviously the expansion of the conference, which included the University of Utah and Colorado. So, he kind of helped spearhead that, got Utah into the conference. Great. But, yeah, it's long overdue. They needed this change up top a few years ago.
It certainly was.
Yes.
No, that was definitely a positive part of it. And really going into it, Sam, you talked about the Pac-12 TV network. That was the big – I mean, that was his – like, mm-hmm. people thought this was great. This was amazing. And he spearheaded all of that and what that was going to look like. And it was just one of those things where they kind of hitched themselves to maybe the wrong horse as far as the Pac-12 network, because a lot of it, it backfired. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate, but you have to have a really good TV deal. And there's no reason the Pac-12 can't. There's a lot of prestigious schools in the conference, and having that exposure will really help the conference out a lot. But, as you mentioned, expansion with Utah and Colorado, I'm not sure that expanding it even more wouldn't be a bad idea. Yeah. It's almost one of those things where you go, when things look bad, we've got to cut things, right? Cut, 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 cut. Mm-hmm. And it's like, show some some moxie. Like, let's expand. We want to get bigger. We think this is a great place. And looking for the right partnerships to come into the conference, I don't think would be a bad idea.
Hey.
But these are the types of things that a new commissioner really needs to look at. Mm-hmm. Got to get a better TV deal. You've got to change the image, and part of the image is this is where folks want to be, and you've got to take care of your marquee sports, and it's football. It will drive everything else in the conference if you can get your football programs the type of support and exposure and really, I think, where people want to, you know, really good coaches have a desire to come and coach at these universities. I mean, there's a lot of things I think the commissioner can help out in to change and improve the image of the Pac-12, because traditionally, like, here's my silver lining. The Pac-12 is the conference of champions, and it's got to get back to that concept, and it has the capability to do it. And I think having a change is the perfect time for this to happen.
If you look at it too, hey, you know, if you're talking about expansion, there is there's a team down south that could use maybe a little boost. I'm talking about Utah Valley. I'm talking about Utah Valley University, baby. Well, there's no way BYU would ever get – Scott – Don't lead anybody down this road. BYU would never get an invite to the Pac-12.
If you got the right commissioner,
yeah, Steve Young,
you recognize the cachet. Fine. Yeah, you know what?
Steve Young would be phenomenal. Ooh,
I'm not opposed to something like that.
Write it down, Steve Young.
But you also get maybe a Boise State, or maybe you go and you get, because Nebraska does not belong in the Big Ten. Oh. I'm just telling you, they need to get out of the Big Ten.
The old Pacific 12 featuring Nebraska. That's like one of my favorite.
Cornfields.
Yeah. Look, you've already reached into Colorado,
Colorado, just about.
Yeah, yeah, it's there.
Yeah, Colorado and Nebraska had great rivalries.
They had a good rivalry, yeah.
And so there's your rivalry, Colorado and Nebraska and BYU and Utah. It makes a much better.
What about
better,
the Rocky Mountain Oyster
natural.
Cup that happens every year, Scott, between Utah and Colorado?
You know,
Colorado.
The Colorado people go, this is not a rivalry. Yeah. We all actually like
each
other.
Who's their rival?
Nebraska. They don't. They're supposed to be Utah. They don't have a rival. Colorado State.
Yeah. No natural enemies in Colorado. No. They don't have any real predators.
Their rival was Nebraska. Nebraska's rival was Oklahoma. Oklahoma's rival was Texas.
This
is like
Big Eight. We're talking Big Eight stuff.
Yeah, that's how it all. It just dominoes.
My goodness. Hey. While we've got you, Sam Farnsworth, tonight, KSL 5 News, 10 o'clock. What do we got going on? I'm imagining some of this breaking news is going to make the sports beat. But also the Jazz, they're in this beautiful spot here in second place in the West.
Hot.
On an off day today, playing the same team they just beat by 16 points last night, tomorrow night.
Yeah. Hey, six straight wins. It's the longest active win streak in the NBA right now. Eight of their last 10 is also a top mark in the NBA, tied with the Lakers. So I'm just, we're going to be hearing from Donovan Mitchell tonight a little bit about how they're approaching playing the same team twice in three nights, right? They're doing that twice in this six-game homestand. I believe the other team they're doing that with is Dallas. But they basically, you know, that's not shocking with the way the NBA wants to schedule around COVID and stuff.
It makes sense, yeah.
Right, to do a lot more. So this is the first time we're seeing something like this year, but we're going to see it, I think, often throughout the remainder of the year. But so a lot more Jazz coming up tonight at 10. And Luka Doncic did his best Donovan Mitchell impersonation tonight. And we'll show you that highlight.
There you go. So catch Sam tonight, KSL 5 News, 10 o'clock. Sam, thanks for hanging out, man.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it.
Sorry I had muted.
No, it's okay.
It's all good, though.
We got you on. We'll be right back. More to go. NFL Roundup is next. And then our two-minute drill to wrap things up. Stay right here with us. It's KSL News Radio. It is KSL's Unrivaled. Congratulations.
KSL's Unrivaled. The Unrivaled NFL Roundup. Premium grade A pro football stories from your two hosts, a former NFL quarterback and
the other guy.
It's the Unrivaled NFL Roundup.
All right, welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell, thanks for being with us. Yes, very excited for we have to cherish all these moments we get, Scott, with these football games this last weekend here. The AFC and NFC Championship games and the NFL Roundup has to do with that. Today, if you have never – listen, let me just give a little plug here. If you've never been able to listen to Scott Mitchell's Helmets Off episodes, maybe you want to start downloading that podcast, because the next episode is going to infuriate you. It might get you grumpy at Scott. Maybe it makes you respect him a little bit more. What you can't say it is that it's not Scott trying to be sensational. Scott has some specific feelings on Patrick Mahomes and the whole back and forth about his injury. He's in protocol, things like that. And so you can get that kind of full download on that take as well on Helmets Off. But I wanted to give you a preview of that with Scott today. Now, Scott, let me play what Andy Reid said about Patrick Mahomes this week in practice. And you know, at some point when you have a guy who's injured, it's and you know he's going to play, it's good to just kind of play off what they may or may not be feeling, of course, during the week. But here's what Andy Reid has had to say about Patrick Mahomes and his possibility of playing this weekend.
Yeah, so he looked good. He's just he's in the protocol, so there's only certain things he can do. He's done well up to this point. So today was, work, limited work and no contact, I think was the schedule for today. So we're, and that's kind of what we're doing on Wednesday. So it fit in perfect for that.
What do you think?
Yeah, limited work. The first of all is a terrible thing to be, because you can't speed it up. Like, and it's all based on the individual, and they have all this testing, baseline testing of his brain, and then they see his activity now, and they see how it's different. He has headaches. There's a lot of physical, signs of where he is as far as a concussion, and it's hard once you get in that protocol. You could be in it for 2-3 weeks, and you can't bypass the product. I mean, if you have a concussion, There's no way around it. And so, when Andy Reid says limited practice or contact, it's like, yeah, put on your helmet and run 10 yards. I mean, that's as limited as it is.
But they don't have to practice
like,
at all.
How do you feel right now?
They don't have to practice at all if they don't want, right? No,
they're not even allowed to practice.
Well, no, but I'm just saying, like, protocol. Even if he's in protocol, but he's out there on the practice field and you have some limited something rather you can do. We can't even just go, yeah, he's in protocol and he's on pace for maybe playing. Like, at this point, you're 19 weeks into the season. Why don't you just go put your feet up, and on Sunday, if you're 100%, you're on the field, bro.
Well, but there are certain, like, he has to hit next level things. So, like, you can sit there like that, and, yeah, you can be fine. But if you all of a sudden go out and you are out in the light of the day, or you're actually exerting yourself physically,
and you get a headache,
and so you have to show that you physically are at a place where, you know, almost playing at game speed, that you don't have those symptoms. And it's different with every person if you really have a concussion, and apparently it looks like he has. But aside from that, what's been concerning to me is Patrick Mahomes certainly hasn't looked like he looked last year. He doesn't seem 100%. He didn't even seem 100% before he had the concussion. You wonder if maybe he had a slight issue with that. I know there's a foot issue, but he just hasn't seemed that sharp, sharp player that we've seen in the past. And I just saw throws. I'm like, that's not Patrick Mahomes. He's off. And he shouldn't be off because – you know, this is a really good football team. He's a really good football player. But when your body is not in complete physical, you know, like 100%, I know guys get banged up. I get that stuff. But Patrick Mahomes looks off. And for that reason, I'm concerned about Kansas City. And they're a team I could say, you know what, I could see this team losing this game. And whether Patrick Mahomes is healthy or not, it wouldn't be a bad idea to start Chad Henne.
Chad Henne, not Patrick Mahomes. Well, yeah, if Patrick Mahomes can't see straight going into the game, yes. If
I'm saying even if he can see straight.
If he's,
because I don't think he's 100%.
If he's out of protocol, you would be an insane person not to put Patrick Mahomes in on Sunday.
I get it. I understand that the guy is like, he's like, he's Patrick Mahomes. He's won the Super Bowl. He's the best player in the NFL. I get that, but I'm not convinced that he's at 100%. Chad Henne is 100%, and he's also been playing a little bit. And that helps him when he gets into – if Chad Henne takes all the practice snaps this week and he goes into a game prepared, Andy Reid's as good as anyone in getting a quarterback ready to play a game. And he showed confidence in him in the playoff game in the most critical moment. He didn't, like, say, timeout. He didn't say get under center and run a quarterback sneak. He said sprint out and throw a pass in the most critical moment maybe of your life. And if certainly, you know, it's so important because if we complete this pass, we win.
But I'm not the guy who's going, I don't care, play under all circumstances. I'm saying if the Chiefs, if the NFL, I mean, look, and could you imagine if he's anywhere near being able to play, Patrick Mahomes isn't going to allow Chad Henne to, you know, he's going to be able to make that decision. Even if Andy Reid's like, hey, man, I think you should sit out. I think Patrick Mahomes is ultimately the guy who's going to make that decision. I don't think it's going to be a GM. I don't think it's going to be the head coach. I really don't. I think that they're going to go, Patrick Mahomes is the guy. He is the guy.
But if he can't pass the protocols, I don't care what they say, he will not play.
No, sit him out. Yeah, absolutely. Sit him out if he can't pass him.
You know what's fascinating about this game to me, though? It really is fascinating.
Tell me.
It's that Kansas City, very small market. Buffalo, smaller market. And they have this. They have these quarterbacks. They have these teams that are like, they're polarizing. Their energy. They're really entertaining and they're really good. And the NFL is just dying right now because they don't want the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs. But these teams are really good.
No, these are the two best.
These quarterbacks
for me,
are really good.
Normally I'm like that where I'm like, oh boy, you think that they want the Milwaukee Bucks versus the Toronto Raptors, you know, in the East Finals. But the reality is that Mahomes is the guy that every kid wants to get the jersey of now. And Josh Allen is like, and the Bills are like this up and coming thing too, where everybody wants to know that story. What does the NFL not want for a matchup for the Super Bowl? The reality is it's kind of a win. They don't want the Bills and the Packers maybe. What they do want, the best one that could ever happen, is that Mahomes and Brady Super Bowl. And of course, you know, that's the possibility of that being on the docket is there because they've played each other in the AFC Championship game before. And so I in terms of what the best, quote unquote, best game is possible, I do hope that it's going to be a Mahomes Brady Super Bowl. But either way, it's not like look, Aaron Rodgers is the best in the game right now. So it's not like it's not going to be. It's going to be an amazing Super Bowl, I think, either way. But Buffalo is the team that probably is the least desirable in the Super Bowl right now. Phillip Rivers, Scott, speaking of least desirable, a guy who's been sort of put upon his whole career as the guy who never got to a title, but 17 seasons, he's in the top five of every major category among quarterbacks. Where is he going to sit all time when it comes to history, Scott? I know we kind of ding him for the no championships, but the guy still is one of the great passers. It's just that he's kind of meh otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at even a guy like Dan Marino, right? I mean, he's a guy that at the time he set the world on fire as far as throwing and just the records and the gaudy numbers that he put up, and he never won a Super Bowl. He did go to one. But, you know, Phillip Rivers never been to a Super Bowl, never felt like he was a guy that you really, you know, got a lot of wins out of. But, you know, the guy threw for a bazillion yards, and it's probably hard to even consider keeping him out just because of just the sheer statistics.
Oh, he'll be a first ballot guy.
Phillip. Yeah, I mean, I know he'll be there, but you kind of get a sense just watching him that it's probably about time to hang it up. And he's had a phenomenal
game. My favorite was the article said, with his unique throwing style, I thought, yeah, Scott's got a thing or two to say about it. All right. We'll be right back. Our 2-minute drill coming up next, wrapping things up in this first hour of the show. Stay right here with us on KSL's Unrivaled.
And KSL.
Very afternoon, and you're the first person to hear it. Congratulations.
All right, welcome back to KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell, Alex Carey. Our last segment, of course, we're talking about Phillip Rivers in part of it. And as we were sitting in the break, I was thinking about the comment you made, Alex, about he had a very unusual throwing motion.
Oh, Phillip Rivers.
Which actually, like, drives me insane.
Anytime anybody has any sort of anything that doesn't look traditional, yeah, Scott's just, out of it. Scott's over it.
But I was thinking in the break, what does his arm action look like? And I think I've come up with it. I think I've figured it out. If Phillip Rivers was a T-Rex, That's what he would look like. So he's so got, he kinda, you know, this kinda, big massive frame and these little tiny arms flipper.
Yeah,
got these little flipper hands, you know, that just it's just like, you know, so he's kind of limited in what he do. So he would be a T-Rex.
Kind of limited in what he can do. Throws for 68,000 yards. Just limited in the amount of Super Bowls you can win.
Well, imagine if he had normal arms. Now, you listen, know, the guy would be, you know, like superstar status.
Tyrannosaurus Rex stands for King Lizard, right?
Yeah.
And, but even he got hit with the comet. You know what I mean? He had a weird delivery. He had a weird delivery when he would take down those, when he would take down all those, you know, those prey. So, big, massive head, tiny hands. That was Philip Rivers, T-Rex in a nutshell. All right. It's that time of the, evening here, Scott. I'm going to hit this music and, you give us a little sum of what the old 2-minute drill is here.
All right, well, you hurry down the field, don't have a lot of time. You got to score a touchdown, kick a field goal, so you go really fast. Our show's kind of the same way. We've got a lot to talk about still, not a lot of time, so we hurry down the field in our show. We talk a little bit about a lot of things. We finish the show. We get a trophy because everyone gets a trophy today, and we go home happy wearing a mask.
All right, stay safe out there, everybody.
Don't want to cry. Crying is, you know, there's no crying anywhere these days.
Let me see here. So, first up, the NBA is going to start enforcing a no hugs at midcourt rule. No crying in baseball, no hugging in basketball. So that's kind of the new thing now to address. They said they've witnessed opposing players disregarding the league's new rules against unnecessary contact on game nights. Now, never mind that these guys went, 2.5 hours sweating on each other and yelling in each other's faces, things like that.
Well, if they talk, you know, when there's a massive, you know, they talk, they call out plays, they're talking on defense, they're talking on offense, and that's where this disease gets spread.
Yeah, no,
It's little particles coming out of your nose or your mouth.
So you got to add no singing happy birthday to players in the locker room. You got to so no hugging the Now you can hug. Now here's the thing. You can hug your teammates. And if you notice, like I was watching pregame with the Jazz this week at one point when they were playing the Pelicans, they all have their traditions. They go around, they high five each other, they hug each other.
Their rituals, their
routines.
Little
things. Yes, yeah. and they're fist bumping the same people on the side, the score table guy, that stuff hasn't stopped. They're still doing that. And now it's just that they say, as of now, and they've had 11 new positive cases this week out of the 502 players. And, boy, they want to see it get down to those single digits. And it's just they're going to high fives, hugs, handshakes now not allowed in post-game conversations. What's good is they always have those conversations with their mouths covered up anyway because they don't want anybody to see what they're saying. So they can do that from a distance and talk trash about the team that they're on. But it's fine. Just add in those extra things. Do what you need to do. As long as we can watch basketball for the foreseeable future, I'm all about it. So
if it helps, great. And I think people just don't. They need, you know, it looks like the new president, he's making everyone wear a mask and, you know, in certain places and encouraging people to wear a mask. Masks help. Mask up. Stay socially distanced. Who cares? Serious, who cares? You don't need you just don't need to do it.
Scott, there's a live stream video camera that's always on at the University of Tennessee, which, of course, is always referred to as Rocky Top, you know, so... there's an iconic rock there at the University of Tennessee. I saw it last year when BYU went there to Knoxville. And this rock is painted just kind of – you can actually go on there and paint it. And there's a 24-hour kind of stream of this thing. And somebody had noticed –
so it kind of changes its color or changes kind of –
yeah, and, you know, if somebody gets on there and vandalizes it, then, you know, they can whitewash it pretty quick and whatever. But they have a 24-hour stream of this thing. And it was taken down an hour or two after this had been put up. But early this Wednesday, there was a an artist who had a white background and a Happy Meal that featured not a smile, or it did have the smile on the face, but instead of eyes, it was money, the money symbols, And I'm loving it. Of course, people never cease to be hilarious. The Tennessee football team, of course, Jeremy Pruitt fired this week amid the allegations and of Tennessee, paying
players. Cash in the McDonald's
bags. Yes, cash in the McDonald's bags, and with the Tennessee rocking the I'm loving it this week. I love people, Scott.
That should be their new mascot. Like just golden
just
arches.
Just get Ronald McDonald out of the field in orange, dude. Oh my goodness. Remember McDonald's orange drink? It should just be the Tennessee. Give me the Tennessee. You know, they've done so much for the golden arches. Just call them the orange arches.
And I think in our world we need more of this.
Yes, we do.
We need to be able to laugh at ourselves. It's one of the great things that happens on our show.
Yeah.
We make fun of each other. We're the brunt of the joke, and we allow it to happen, and we embrace it, and I think more people should laugh at themselves.
Yes.
And
or at the very least, we should
be better off.
We should make more fun of institutions that cheat at high levels. So,
Or we should all spend more time at McDonald's.
At McDonald's. I'm going to go into my local McDonald's and go, I'll take number one. Also, you have that special Tennessee order that we were talking about earlier. Like, what do you got in the back that's got the old volunteer? Can I get one of those? Get a full bag of cash from McDonald's. They should do that as a giveaway.
Do you know what?
Burger King gives away the PS5s. McDonald's just gives away bags, like greasy bags of cash, if you come in and you're in Knoxville, Tennessee.
You know what we really should do? We should go get lottery tickets.
Oh, the Powerball.
It's at $1 billion.
Yeah.
It's $1 billion.
Tell you what, Scott,
dollars.
I'll split it with you.
I'll still do the radio show.
Oh, I know. I'll tell you what, we'd have to calm you down even more so because you would like, I don't care. I don't even need this job. I ordered the volunteer at the local lottery. What do? We go to Idaho? That's all we have to do, right?
Or Wyoming.
Yeah. Hey, listen.
Yeah.
We don't encourage any gambling of any sort here at KSL
News
Radio.
No.
That being said, if Scott and I are half billionaires after the weekend, just don't take it personally. All right. For Scott Mitchell, I'm Alex Keery. Thanks for being with us. We're going to take the long break here. Did you have fun tonight, Scott?
Always have a great time.
All right. So we'll be back again. Another edition of KSL's Unrivaled will be coming at you. For Scott, I'm Alex, our producer, Jeremy. Jessica hitting the buns behind the glass. We'll see you next time, everybody.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.